Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to IWDM Radio. The program you are about to hear is a community service program on IWDM Radio. Please note, this content is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, legal, professional, or financial counsel or advice, and no liability shall extend to the host, guest, or agent with IWDM or Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio is not endorsed, sponsored, or certified by any third-party agency. Thank you for listening.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. You have tuned in to a production on station IWDM titled The Muslim Reading Club. The Muslim Book Reading Club. It just started about a month ago, and we're off to a great start. We are reading from the wonderful book written by our sister, Dr. R. Zakiya Muhammad. May Allah forgive her for her sins and grant her paradise. And our sister, she passed just when the book first released. But it's a wonderful book. It's a book about the life of our sister, Claire Muhammad. The book is titled Mother of the Nation, Clara Evans Muhammad. We are reading from volume number one. Volume one. This volume one is distinct from volume two in that they look almost identical. But the difference is in two small ways. In volume two, Sister Clara is wearing eyeglasses, whereas in volume one, she's not wearing eyeglasses. And in volume two, it has at the bottom the later years from 1933 to 1975. And that's how you can distinguish the two volumes from one from two. Otherwise, it would look almost identical. And we greet you all with the greetings of peace. I forgot to say, assalamu alaikum to you all. We have a few people on. I'm at a disadvantage because last week I had the advantage of being in Orlando, Florida for the leadership conference, and it was a wonderful, fantastic occasion, a lot of life and joy, and really boosted our spirits, which means I was not able to be on full time to listen to last week's reading. So I do not know what page the reading is to start this week. If there's anybody on this week who was on last week who knew where the reading stopped, you can press 1 on your phone and we'll bring you in. So you can tell us where we stopped. I think someone did tell me, Sister Dr. Karan did tell me, I believe, but it escapes my memory. So if there's anybody who's on now, who was on last week, can you press 1 on your phone and we'll bring you into the conversation and you can tell us where to begin reading for this week. No one's pressing 1 on your phone. Okay. I don't know. I see Sister Hodges, she just signed on. Sister Hodges, I'll bring you on. Do you know where we left off last week? Yes, ma'am.
No. I don't have the page number.
Right, because I was in Orlando last week, and I do not recall. Let me look at my text messages real quick and see if I can find that where we left off last week. Otherwise, we're going to have to pick a page. Okay. Well, You have a number for Sister Sultana? Maybe she may know.
Yes, I do.
Assalamualaikum, Brother Imam. Imam Sahir.
Yes.
This is Quran. And I have my hand raised.
You did? How did you see it?
Yes. It's page 62.
Oh, I see it now. Page 62. Great. Alhamdulillah. Thank you. Okay. I apologize. I see your hand raised now. I missed it. I'm sorry. That's why it's good to have a call in there, right? You can come in when you want to. All right.
Yeah.
Page 62.
That's where
okay.
we ended.
Great. Good. Okay, so where do we begin? The next page?
Well, actually, we should begin on page 62.
Okay, we should begin the page.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Your sister Sultana read last week. Do we have someone? I think I read the week before she did. Do you have anybody who wants to volunteer to read today? Take care of some notes.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can read if no one else will read.
I'm sorry?
I can read.
Okay. Sister Karan? Dr. Karan?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, she'd be so kind. Oh, you want to be half? Then maybe I could be half if you want to. How do you want to do it?
I can read page 62 and 63, and then I'll let you take it from there.
Okay.
All right. So we're reading page 62, and it begins, in an article that appeared in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, he wrote of the environment during his student tenure and Reverend, he's recollections of the school in the early years when Clara may have been a student. He recalls that even in the confines of school, black children were subject to violence due to racial hatred. And he writes, the Reverend Clark first recalled a bitter night in the 1920s. A car or truck driven by one of his teachers had struck a white child playing in the street. Mm-hmm. Rumors spread that the Ku Klux Klan was coming that night to sack the school. He sent Mrs. Clark to the home of a country friend for her safety. He stayed up alone all night reading his Bible by lamplight, with his double-barreled shotgun across his lap. He was waiting for the mob. Fortunately, cooler heads prevailed. The injured child recovered, and the school was saved, end quote. But Reverend Clark's words were, "Sonny, if you break into my house, I will kill you." He called every boy Sonny and every girl Miss or Young Lady and knew each student by name and their family as well as he knew the Bible. The courage of Reverend Clark inspired the community of Cordele and set an example of how one should stand against tyranny. As an adult, Clara made her own courageous stands. Her faith in God made her strong, but memories of her father and Reverend Clark's courage is believed to have been a model for her as well. See, normal school also appears to be the most viable option, because it was the only school in Cordele that went to the eighth grade. The family, Nathaniel and Lottie Raya, confirmed. Clara says she went to the eighth grade. Her younger son, Wallace, Imam W. Dean Muhammad, reported, "My mother went to the seventh or eighth grade." When Clara went to school, resources were scant, and historical information on contributions of black people to the United States and the world were unknown. The Bible was the basic textbook in a graduate of Lincoln University, as many theologians were during that time, pointed out the roles black people played in the development of civilization in the Mesopotamia Valley between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. He taught that the Nubians and other black people were among those inhabiting Egypt and Asia Minor, that Melchizedek, the king of Salem, was black and was the first high priest mentioned in the Bible, Genesis 14:18. the reverend and all of the teachers in the school discounted Noah's curse on his son Ham, claiming Ham's black descendants of wood and drawers of water, end quote. He said, when did God start listening to a drunk? Dr. Clark, like other preachers, disagreed with the curse of Ham narrative in public, but privately could not reconcile the matter spiritually or rationally. At home, church, and school, seeds of self-pride and glimpses of black history were planted in Clara Evans early in life. She did not know at the time that they would take root and blossom when the time was right. The Clarks decreed that the Jim Crow balcony of the Cordell Theater was off limits, for the students of Gillespie Normals violated their sense of dignity, as did all the laws of racial segregation. Referred to as the Peanut Gallery, or Nigger Heaven, the balcony was the only area of blacks, the only area blacks could sit in at a movie theater in Cordell during that time. The dress code at the Gillespie Normal School required a white blouse, a navy blue skirt, and cotton stockings. Boys wore a white shirt, navy pants, and tie. The dress code still existed in the 1930s and was especially forced for boys to enable them to avoid the popular zoot suit, which was for black and Mexican males living in the city.
Okay, you want me to read?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Okay. The hem of Clara's garment touched somewhere between the calf of her leg and her ankle, representing the dignity and moral consciousness of women and girls in early 20th century America. Clara treasured how learning opened her mind and spirit. With only 8 years of formal education, she was infused as a young child with the love of God, ethical behavior, compassion, ethnic pride, and community obligation. Each represented the values and moral rectitude she would need for the great work she was to accomplish as an adult. Her life's work is a testament that the wanted proper education for the next generations. Yet the exposure Clara had from dedicated teachers was priceless. Granddaughter Rukaya Muhammad Farah, who later lived with Clara, said, quote, my grandmother insisted that I speak good English. In fact, both of my grandparents insisted that all of their children speak excellent English and focus on education. People think because my grandparents had limited formal education that they were not intelligent. To the contrary, my grandmother and grandfather insisted we enunciate and speak in complete sentences. They knew good English when they heard it, and we were often corrected. We were not to be slack or lacking speaking. They each corrected us and made certain we not only used correct grammar, but also enunciated excellent English. During Clara's developing years, the level of craftsmanship among her people was outstanding, an outgrowth from executing manual labor for centuries during enslavement. Yet, after the Emancipation Proclamation, Black Code, and other discriminatory practices rendered these skills moot in establishing lasting business enterprises for the former enslaved. Negroes were hired to do the labor, but were virtually prohibited from ownership. When they persisted, their businesses were boycotted, burnt down, or owners were killed. For those who not, on the next page, got a picture of Dr. Corley G. Woodson. The reading continues. As a result, Teaching and preaching became twin wheels for Negro advancement after the Reconstruction era. The education they received in missionary schools, be they grammar schools or universities, however, was repeatedly questioned by Dr. Corey G. Woodson in his scathing 1933 seminal book, The Miseducation of the Negro. Clara's nephew, Clarence Walker Muhammad, the son of her sister, Rosie, lived with Clara in Chicago from 1961 to 1971. He was born in Cordell and lived with Clara's grandparents. He recalled his grandmother, Mary Lou, when she was approximately 60 years old or so, and said, quote, she never wore a dress above her ankle and carried a croaker sack on her back. She had a walking stick with a crook on the end and whipped me until I turned out to be a good boy because I was really bad, end quote. When three of Clara's children were questioned about their grandmother, Elijah Jr., Dr. Akpo, and Nathaniel, each said they never heard Clara mention her mother, only her father. The other children and grandchildren responded similarly. The Gillespie School stressed that dress mattered in life, and Clara was meticulous throughout her life about her dress. As an adult, Clara loved her Muslim dress and the soft pastel colors Muslim women made popular. Pink was her favorite color. Students were inspected daily, and their presentation of themselves in a clean, organized manner was critical. Quote, cleanliness is next to godliness, end quote, was a mantra repeated throughout the school day. A mantra that became a part of the life of Clara Evers Muhammad. Clara first heard that mantra at home from her mother rather than daily at school, but Clara got something else from school. It is believed Clara Evers had a role model in her teachers, possibly Mrs. Clark, which was different from the role model mother presented. As wholesome as that model was, Mrs. Clark was formally educated, refined with social graces. The manner in which she ran the school had a lasting impression on Clara. That impression appeared to be replicated in Clara's future decisions regarding women, education, and how she presented herself as a mother of the Nation of Islam and patron of the University of Islam School. This is not to underestimate Clara's inherent aspirations for a dignified expression of her human identity. It is, therefore, reasonable to conclude that impressions on Clara as a young girl came from several sources: the home, church, and women's clubs. But it also appears to her teachers, possibly Mrs. Clark or others, were a major influence. The Gillespie School had a quote-unquote self-help policy and program where students worked at building and bricklaying, formed partnerships with black families. Mrs. Clark formed partnerships with black farmers and families. They built facilities, produced food for the school, and provided maintenance, dry cleaning, and laundry services. The use of tobacco and drinking alcohol was forbidden, and the reverend frequently lectured on the health hazards of both. The school curricula included Bible, agriculture, home economics, band, business education, nursing, Latin, Shakespeare, string music, piano lessons, and science. But there was no school for youth beyond the eighth grade. Years later, the founding of the Gillespie Institute and upgrade of the Gillespie Normal School served that purpose. We know Claire Evans loved learning. She was smart and an excellent speller. Her son, Nathaniel, reported, quote, "My mother went to school and completed the eighth grade, and I recall her and Daddy having spelling contests, and Mama would always win. She was a good speller and much smarter than my daddy," end quote. As a black girl in the early 20th century American South, the life of Claire Evans was more predictable than precarious. The image of who she was and what she envisioned herself to be were her private thoughts. We do know the prevailing image of the black woman, particularly of her skin color, to the larger white society was that of a mammy, a maid, or a vulnerable sex object. We know Clara was determined to be neither. What she was determined to be was dignified, and what she was determined to do was to make a difference. In less than two decades, Claire Evans will be the moving force behind a national system of schools that will change education in America. In the next chapter, chapter 3, titled Meeting Destiny, Elijah, covering the years 1916 to 1921. In 1916, on her 17th birthday, Clara emerged as a beautiful young woman. She was like a spring of fresh water with a rich milk chocolate complexion, as smooth and clear as glass. Thick, crinkly, dark brown hair that fell to the nape of her neck, big brown eyes, and a full nose and lips denoting strong African features, wrapped in an innate elegance, a description shared by many black women, but seldom appreciated within the circumstances they found themselves in early 20th century America. She was soft-spoken, with an engaging smile that revealed beautiful teeth. Later, she would add a small touch of gold to one, as practiced in many black communities. Clara had keen observation skills cultivated in the terror environment of Cordell, Georgia. Her insightful, bright brown eyes could pierce to your core, and she had small but strong hands. Ironically, the monumental accomplishments Claire would make in her adult life were executed by a woman petite in stature. She was 5'3" tall, with a 20-inch waist, and weighed 105 pounds, never exceeding 115 pounds for the majority of her life. In less than two decades, Claire would embrace the policy of the Nation of Islam and the MGT and GCC, Muslim Girls Training and General Civilization class, where he was taught, "Your beauty is in your weight, and women should guard it." It is reported that if Clara exceeded her weight by 3 pounds, she would immediately fast for 3 days. With an unshakable faith in God and a moral compass pointed to always do the right thing, Clara said what was on her mind and was known to not bite her tongue. She was a believer with determined independence to follow the vision that quickened her spirit. This is a subtitle, character. It reads, those who knew her intimately spoke of her enjoyable sense of humor, exacting discipline, and loving heart. Even as a young woman, her presence was commanding, but her manner was quiet, calming. You knew you were in the presence of a force of nature. Regal but humble, Clara Evans reflected the instruction from her parents and teachers. She was immaculate in her personal and social graces and was blossoming into a stunning young woman. Her father was proud of her. That description of Clara stayed with her as an adult. She was so described virtually word for word by Dr. Lonnie Shabazz when minister at Temple No. 4 in Washington, D.C. from 1963-1975. When I interviewed him, he was Dr. Abdul Alim Shabazz, distinguished professor and chair of the mathematics department, Lincoln University, Pennsylvania. He said of Clara, quote, she was royalty, a very, very beautiful lady. You knew you were in the presence of dignity requiring honor and respect. She was a lady of high carriage. Spring in 1917 at a church social in Cordell, Clara met him and everything changed. The air, her breathing, her steps, and her heart. His name was Elijah, which means the Lord is my God. He was handsome, sensitive, and poor. He came from Deep Step, approximately 3 miles west of Sandersville, Georgia, from a family of a Baptist preacher, father, a devoted mother, 13 children, and poor economic existence. His family did what most families in poor southern towns did in early 20th century America. They moved with the hope of improving their economic condition to seek a better circumstance. They landed in Cordell in 1900. With the intention of the males working on the railroad or at the sawmill. Since everyone knew everyone in the black community, everyone knew that the poor family was dirt poor. Middleton Poole, a white immigrant from North Carolina, had moved to Sandersville, Georgia in 1805. By 1850, he owned thousands of dollars in assets and 22 slaves. Upon his death in 1861, his 41-year-old daughter, Jane Irwin Swint, inherited 14-year-old Irwin Swint as a servant. Following emancipation, Irwin married a mulatto woman named Peggy, who bore him a son, William Poole, 1868. On January 9th, 1887, William married Mariah Hall, whose mother, Ellen, was a mulatto, fathered by her white slave master, very light in complexion. Ellen had been separated from her mother through sale during slavery. Her white half-brother was reportedly a state senator in Georgia. The Poole family, having the letter E to the, the Poole family added the letter E to their last name, grew quickly, eventually producing 13 children. Elijah was born on October 7th, 1897. On page 72, there's a picture of Mariah Poole Muhammad, the mother-in-law of Clara Muhammad. Okay. And I continue reading. As early as age 10, he had to work to help support the family. He listened to his father's Baptist preaching but felt that something was missing in scriptural interpretation. At 16, he left home to find work in Macon, and over the next few years, worked as a laborer in a variety of occupations, including farm work, sawmills, railroad construction, etc. Seeing a childhood friend, Lynch, created a traumatic experience that stayed with him for the rest of his life, referring to the life of Elijah Muhammad. Continue reading. Curtis Evans had status in the community and no sympathy for the poor when it came to Clara. He was not going to have his daughter married down for a man from a dirt poor family with no prospects. And there was nothing Elijah could do to convince him that he was suitable for his daughter. Poverty or not, Elijah Poole was smitten with Clara Evans, and Clara Evans had a mind of her own. One family story says, while visiting a county fair, a fortune teller told Clara she would marry a red man, reddish complexion, who would be famous. Another family member says, when she saw him, she simply knew that he was the one. What time we have? I don't hear my time is running. What time is it?
It's 1:32.
Okay, I'm going to check the four. Yeah. Should I go through check the four? And then
it's okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't get it. You have a hand raised, though, so I don't know if that person has a question or a comment.
I tell you, because I'm trying to read, and I can't see my screen while I'm reading, so can you work the board while
I'll you certainly will. Yes, I will. So we're going to now to 856-718. Welcome to the Muslim Book Reading Club. You have a question or a comment? State your name and where you're calling from.
Sultan Ali from New Jersey. Enjoyed the reading. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Okay, good, good. Okay. I will, we're on page 74? Good. I'm going to describe the picture on page 74 before I begin the reading. It is a poster for the movie that came out called The Birth of a Nation. Show a picture of a Klansman with horse on his hind legs and forelegs kicking. And this KK man, he's holding a cross in his hand with his KKK uniform on. And this was a movie by D.W. Griffiths called The Birth of a Nation. Yeah. And just a little side note, I'm going to say it in here or not. Yeah, it do. So I won't need to say it. I guess read. Page 74 is titled, chapter 4, titled A Changing World. Outside of Cordell, the world was changing. By 1916, the Ku Klux Klan had reorganized. Lynching was increasing throughout the South. The Great Migration had begun and Booker T. Washington died. Moreover, during this period, racism and segregation were promoted by the President of the United States as being quote-unquote progressive, as the progressive Woodrow Wilson. Wilson even hosted a screening at the White House of D.W. Griffith's pro-KKK film, The Birth of a Nation, and boasted afterward about how good it was. During his administration, black postal workers across the country lost their jobs, and federal agencies adopted segregation. Subtitle next, Black Women. Symbols of representation of black women were varied and negative. Like virtually every developing young girl, consciously or not, Clara looked for role models. Since emancipation, black women were looking for dignity and self-determination for their families and their people. They were speaking against injustice, standing for equal opportunity, and demanding an end to black codes. They sought to reunite black families torn apart by enslavement. Some were making cultural and entrepreneurial inroads, such as Madam C.J. Walker, Bessie Smith, and Mae Rainey. These women traveled throughout the South promoting their songs and their innovative hair care products, which were specially made for Negro women. Other women embraced teaching as a profession, as the thrust for education was perceived to be the freedom. At the bottom of page 75, there's a photo of Mary McLeod Bethune. She has a line of young women dressed up real neat. I guess it was about 15, 20 of them lined up, just standing on the dirt road. And the caption for the picture reads, Mary McLeod Bethune with girls from the Literary and Industrial Training School for Negro Girls. Yes, okay. Page 76 got two more pictures. One of Madam C.J. Walker, the first female self-made millionaire in America in the Guinness World Book of Records. And beneath her is another picture of Bessie Smith. Bessie, her song, quote, Downhearted Blues, unquote, became the first selling record by an African-American artist. Again, that song is called Down, in case you want to Google it. It's by Bessie Smith, titled Downhearted Blues. Next page has a picture of Mae Rainey, one of the earliest blues singers to record. She was billed as, quote-unquote, mother of the blues. Okay. I continue reading on page 77. Clara had to figuratively fight the antebellum images of Mammy and the black and the half-naked slave girl, which were pervasive and had taken root in the American stereotypic psyche. To combat that image, black women united and fought for economic self-sufficiency and education. Irrespective of the challenge, impressive accomplishments were made. However, Clara and her siblings and Cordell were removed from these women's efforts, but not removed from the insults and barriers. Perceptions permeated the American ethos. Irrespective of the Emancipation Proclamation, Reconstruction, and Carter Evans' standing in his community. Subtitle, Women Identity. The core of the struggle for Clara and young women like her was seeking a dignified human identity. The notion of becoming educated was seen as a means to achieve that dignity. Yet, education for blacks in the 19th and early 20th century had mixed results. In comparatively small Cordell, any education was difficult to achieve. And Clara had dreams. She was smart but constrained because she could not further her education beyond the 8th grade, as there was no high school for black youth. She wanted more, but the reality of her oppressive environment says she could not have more. In fact, the former governor of Georgia, Ellen D. Candler, wrote in 1901, quote, "I do not believe in higher education for the darky. He should be taught trades. But when he is taught the fine arts, he gets educated above his caste, and it makes him unhappy." At 6 o'clock every Sunday evening, Elijah would come a-carting to Claire's house, having traveled Rock House Road between Macon and Cordell. He would be wearing his only loose suit and tie and would leave promptly at 9 o'clock p.m. Clarence Walker Muhammad, the son of Clara's younger sister, Rosa Lee, reported, quote, "My mama said she would get jealous when Elijah came because he took time away from her talks with Clara, which she really enjoyed. She said she would be so mad when he came that she would tell the other brothers and sisters that she saw them smooching on the steps," end quote. Smooching or not, courtship in the black community and larger society in early 20th century America was a serious and highly respectable state of affairs. The majority of black women and girls in the early 20th century America were virtuous in their dress and behavior, which necessitated that men marry them if men chose to enjoy the privileges that came with marriage. If marriage did not appear to be a viable option, courtship ceased. There was no such thing as courting for recreational purposes or single dating. All courting was with the intent of marriage. Unbeknown to Clara at the time, this position is standard Islamic practice. Clara's daughter, Lottie Raya, shared with considerable animation that when Cordis Evans finally found out who the family of Elijah Poole was, he put a stop to it. Clara's sons, Nathaniel and Elijah Jr., confirmed the story that Clara's father actually got his shotgun and threatened to shoot Elijah if he ever came near his precious daughter again. But it was too late. As a young woman contemplating her future, Clara had few options. If she gave any thought to higher education in college, it may well have presented itself as an elusive dream, considering she had not finished high school. The closest school was in Atlanta, and the logistics of leaving home, traveling alone, with no relatives in that part of Georgia was daunting. With Elijah pursuing her and him having only a third grade education, higher education seemed also. The talk coming through her community did not always present college education for blacks in a favorable light, and there was evidence to support that such education resulted in submitting to and imitating white people. Clara knew there were limitations on her eighth grade education. What she did not know was that 8 years of loving teaching and nurturing, in addition to her strong moral upbringing from her family, had given her a sufficient foundation for the great work she was to do. For the immediate future, there was an important decision to be made, and she and Elijah were considering it. Race riots were moving to the south in the northern United States, with one of the deadliest in the summer of 1919 in Chicago. It started at a beach when a Caucasian man hit a black man in the head with a rock because he drifted into the white swimming section. Other Caucasians stoned the man until he was incapacitated, and eventually drowned. When the perpetrators were not arrested, fighting ensued. Vigilante groups roamed the streets of Chicago, and more than 100 blacks were murdered. Their stores and businesses burnt. The carnage lasted more than 1 week. Next subtitle is called Back to Africa. A revival of the quote-unquote Back to Africa movement was brewing. The first effort was initiated by a black man, Paul Kufi, who settled Sierra Leone beginning in 1811. Later, abolitionists and philanthropists throughout the American Colonization Society of 1816 continued it. They credited themselves by suggesting they were supporting enslaved Africans, but their motive was disputed. Here, Morton Delaney, he's called the father of black nationalism. Now continue reading. Morton Robinson Delaney was the most prominent early advocate of black nationalism. Forced to quit Harvard Medical School because of his race, he became convinced that whites would never permit African Americans to participate as equals in the United States. He took up the call for black nationalism publishing in 1852, The Condition, Elevation, Immigration, and Destiny of the Colored People of the United States, Politically Considered, in which he promoted immigration to Africa and the founding of a new nation. Caucasians who feared a growing free black population pushed for the efforts to get them out of America and back to Africa. In the 1920s, Marcus Garvey started a Back to Africa movement, as the oppression from Caucasians was unbearable. With the invention of the radio in 1920, news reports throughout local and state areas were more readily available and contributed to the tenseness of racial tension. Before Clara reached her 20th birthday, two additional lynchings occurred in Cordell, and numerous ones throughout other parts of Georgia. The environment in Cordell was so vile as to be described as suffocating. People longed for the freedom of breathing space where the killing would stop and peace and justice would be the law of the land. Oppression and the impact of the Great Migration permeated the air. Clara was among the many who knew something had to change. Although it went against everything her parents wanted for her, Clara's decision was not difficult. After approximately 2 years of courting, her clear vision saw that she was to marry Elijah. Guided by her prayers and the joy and peace that followed, she believed it was the right thing to do. She now had to tell her parents, and she was determined to hold her ground. Page 82 got the wedding picture of Elijah and Clara Muhammad. It says wedding anniversary here, courtesy of their son, Nathaniel Muhammad. Okay. Continue reading. Clara and Elijah were two souls joined for the great destiny they were to share, the birth of a new people. Their passion for their people and revulsion, their passion for their people and revulsion for the suffering and humiliation they witnessed since childhood created a bond and a vision of hope for a better day. they could talk and understand each other because they shared the same pain and aspiration for human dignity, not just for themselves, but for a people lost, hopeless, barely existing, as well as those who had talents and gifts but were stifled. Neither knew what the future would be. They only knew they were to experience it together. The suggestion by some authors that Clara and Elijah were driven by hate is a fallacy. Their firsthand knowledge of the behavior of white America had given them a reality that cannot be dismissed by spurious arguments. The energies were driven by love for each other, their people, and hope for a dignified future. In the context of the time she lived, Clara's decision was predictable. By the age of 20, Clara Evans was determined to marry Elijah Poole over the objections of her parents. It was reported by her daughter, Lottie Raya, and confirmed by all family members that she told them, "I promise I would marry him if all he has is the shirt on his back." Literally was all he had. In the middle of a cold Georgia night in March, Elijah came for Clara with a horse and wagon. She climbed out of a window of her parents' home and added herself to the wagon under the blankets, along with a small section of her belongings. They drove away and were married on March 17, 1919. Clara's daughter, Lottie Raya, said, "My mother told me they were married for 53 years. 1972, and at times she regretted her decision, but would not leave him," end quote. There was something greater compelling her to stay. She had a mission, and it was with him, the man who was to become the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That's the end of our reading today. I stopped on page 83. We will begin our next reading on page 85 with chapter 4. Dr. Karan, can you work the board? I'm trying to get back to my board now. We have any thoughts on this reading today? Any comments? I still like how the author of the book, Dr. Zakia, how she's doing a very good job, I think, in painting the picture of the environment and the background that created a Clara Muhammad. I think she does a very good job on that, because a lot of times we see a person after they have arrived to a certain point and don't know the circumstances that created them.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing that stands out for me, and I just want to remind the listening audience, if you want to make a comment, then push 1 on your phone and we'll bring you into the conversation. I think now that I have read Dr. Zakia's book, like prior to this, for years we had heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad only had a third grade education and she only had an eighth grade education. We were told seventh or eighth grade education. And I just always thought that she just dropped out of school. So now, having read this beautiful research that Dr. Zakia has done, we can understand that it was a part of the system that was set up. So there wasn't a way for her to go on. She wanted to. She desired to go on for school and, you know, to advance her education, but she could not because of the way that the system was set up. So I really like the way that Dr. Zakia has done the due diligence with her research and provided us with historical data that we can use. And just as you said, that background information that we get so we understand the time period in which they lived that motivated them. I also like the way that she made it clear that they were not driven by hate. And as you were talking, reading, what I thought about was that drive for dignity, that drive for self-love, I think was very apparent in the message that was being delivered, but also apparent. And the reason they had to call a spade, they called that white man the devil, was because of all they had seen and all they had experienced. Mm-hmm. And there was not in their purview anything that said anything godly about them. And so you can understand that perspective from which they came to do that, to label them as such. So that helped also to understand that thinking of that time.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. And that's very important for us to know, because down, my mother and father came from Alabama, right next door. You know, so a lot of this, you know, that I'm reading, I have people in my family that went through the same thing, which includes the migration north. And so there were things pushing us.
It reminds me, he
wrote a book about the dynamic African-American soul. And he talks about things that were working in us. But Dr. Zakiya Muhammad, she's done a very good job on going after the details of how Elijah Muhammad saw his friend hanging from a tree. You know, that's powerful. I mean, that tears at your soul. Even 100-something years later, that tears at your soul. But Dr. Zakiya does a good job on bringing that to our forefront. So when we get into conversation about the Nation of Islam and how it started, why it started, you got to put yourself, as I say, put yourself in someone else's shoes and get to use your imagination to go back a century and say, you got a president in the White House showing the movie and promoting the movie about the KKK. Can you imagine living during that time period?
Yeah.
So we do encourage our listeners, as you press one and make your comments about this reading today, we would love to hear from you, because this is how we really benefit from reading.
Mm-hmm. And we don't have anyone who's pressed one as of yet.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, well, now, see, there's something else that here in my mind. I think we got to call it, because I got my bullet up, man. We have a caller here from 914.
Yes.
Okay. I'll bring him on. Okay. Call from 914. Can you give us your first name, your city, and your comments, please?
Yeah, this is Muhammad from Mount Vernon, New York. I'd just like to say I really enjoy the reading. I have both your books. I have them sometime. I read both books, and I really enjoy the reading. I've been trying to get on the reading every week, but it's like something comes up, and between 1 and 2 o'clock, I'm on the road or something. But I'm just going to keep on listening. Allah bless me with the opportunity to get a chance to read for y'all.
Yes, sir.
Excellent book reading club.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Was there
anything in today's reading that kind of got your attention? I know you read it before, but sometimes the second reading, you can get more out of it. Was there anything that got your attention today?
Yeah, this is what got my attention, really. It's Sister Clara stuck to her. And like I said, sometimes she wanted to end a relationship, but she said God had given her that assignment to stay with Muhammad, to stay with him to the end. So that's right. She wasn't going to let nothing change her mind.
That's right. Good. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa-alaykum. Thank you. Yes. So if there's no other comments about the Quran, at the top of the hour.
Absolutely. We're at the top of the hour, and your reading was wonderful. I love it. It was easy to follow. I'm thinking, just looking at the book itself, as you were reading, there were some things that were different. So I guess they've done different publishings of it? Because some of my language was different as you were reading from what you were reading. Just to note,
is that
those
right?
Being asked. Yes.
Is this the, was there, let me see, was there a different, let me see, because sometimes they have a second printing, and they will tweak it as they go. But I don't see anything in here that says, I'm looking through the front of the book, that says.
I'm looking in the front too, and I don't see that either.
You get his volume one. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, but I can see that it's happening. This right here
right.
says copyright 2020
mm-hmm.
on page 3.
Yeah, that's what mine
says.
Yeah. So that's just a note, because it was one point where you were reading it. It wasn't in my book, so I just listened to you, and then I could catch up and I could see where they went back to that. And there was some information. Yeah, there were information that they included in here that you didn't have in yours, apparently, and vice versa for me, the same thing.
Okay, so both books have something the other didn't have.
Yes.
That's interesting.
That is.
Okay. That's quite
interesting. But I look forward to next week.
Yes, ma'am. I should be in town again. Oh, last week we were in Orlando, and that was a very special time.
I'm doing
that. Was a very special time.
I'll say this.
Good.
That engagement really helped our community to continue to grow in advance. I'm excited about it and hearing from all of the.
We know tomorrow I'm having Dr. Bashir Ali, Dr. Bashir Ali, he's the convener. He can be my guest for the second hour tomorrow. So people can tune in, call the same number. It's 714-816-4673 number tomorrow. And he'll be in for the second hour for my blog tomorrow. We're going to discuss the conference we had last week in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
The first hour I have Sister Khalila Ali, she's PhD also. She's the second wife of Muhammad Ali. Dr.
Right.
Khalila Ali Camacho. She's going to be my guest for the first hour. She has a new book out, too, called Undefeated, the Untold Story.
Oh.
We're going to discuss her book. Plus, she's going to be our speaker here on the 12th for our banquet. We have every year we have a parent appreciation banquet. And this will be our 31st consecutive banquet. And she's going to be our speaker at the banquet. So she's going to speak about that and about her book. So tune in tomorrow at 1:00, and we're going to have our conversation with we got all these doctors around here. They got you, Dr. Karan, you a doctor? I'm going to go get me a doctorate. Dr. Bashir Ali.
I'm doing
Dr. Khalila. That's good. I was kind of teasing, but it gets down on me. This goes back to Claire Muhammad, all these doctors we got. There's a connection. That's a big connection. So, praise be to Allah. So, okay.
Yes.
So, we will sign off. And inshallah, those who can't join tomorrow, 1:00, same phone number. If not, we'll see you on one of the other fabulous programs on Station 9 WDM. Okay. Assalamu alaikum. You know what I'm going to do? I always do it. I have extra time, so I think someone got a comment here. Is that 2678? Is that
yep,
Atlanta?
That's me. Yes, that's
okay.
Me.
Okay. Yeah, what I do with the time I have left for those who want to stay, since I save the time, I always play some lecture by Imam Fazli Muhammad. So, because the time is here. And he is one, he talks on Rabbi Al-Amin. I guess I'll play that one for those who want to stay. Well, that's it. Assalamu alaikum. It's Imam W.D. Muhammad.
We want to begin by first pointing to some, I would say, notes of help or support to anyone who wants to study the Quran. And the first and most important of these notes is that the Quran is in Arabic, but the Quran has a superior Arabic to that the Arabs had before the Quran. Arabic then enriched itself, the Quran, the revelation to Muhammad, the Prophet, prayers and peace be on him, enriched Arabic as a language, It made the language richer in communication, effective communication. It made it richer in beauty of mechanics, style, etc. However, Arabic is a language that was valued even at the time of revelation for its I would say its effectiveness to give a message without wasting a lot of words. Power of communication to communicate a lot with few words, and with its, I would say, naturalness. The Arabic language has a real naturalness, and you can only become aware of that through really the study of the Arabic language itself. You come to learn that the Arabic has a real naturalness. It's a real naturalness there. As an example, I would say, and I don't have time to really show you all these things now, this is a big subject in itself, that much of our language that we formed ourselves has a real resemblance to Arabic in terms of how we make expressions, you know, how we form an expression. Has a real resemblance to Arabic, the way expressions are made in Arabic. I have one right now. We used to say, "What's with you, man?" And nobody taught us that. We didn't go to school to learn that expression from school or from anybody. We said, "What's happening, man? What's happening?" These are acceptable expressions in Arabic, classic Arabic. Whereas for us, you know, in English, it's the bad English. It's not good English, you know. What's happening, you know? What's the matter with you, you know? What's the matter with you? What's with you? Expressions like that. Those expressions are really acceptable, classical standard Arabic. Same expressions in Arabic. So Arabic is very natural language. They're very natural language. And believe me, the best of all expressions, I'm using the term expression now in the full context of culture, art, everything, language, art, work, whatever. The best of all expressions in the long run are the expressions that stay true to the original nature. Those are the best expressions. Expressions that stay true to the original nature. This talk that I'm giving you is to introduce you to the study of the Quranic Arabic. To go into the Quran, to learn the Quran in Arabic, thinking that this Quran was just given in Arabic is not enough. Says, why? What was the reason? What's the main reason for the Quran being in Arabic? Some will say because Arabic is the language, is the best language. No, it's because Muhammad was the best choice for the prophet. Muhammad was the best choice, the last prophet, and he spoke Arabic. So the Quran says, never did God send a messenger to a people speaking another language, something different from what they spoke. That's the understanding. That's the logic. He was an Arab, and the Quran was revealed to in Arabic so that he could communicate it to his people who were Arabs, firstly. Communicate it to them firstly. And his language was Arabic. He was a native child of Arabia. So his language was Arabic, so God wouldn't communicate him. The same rule. It would be stupid for a man to speak to an audience in another language, in a language they don't understand, and it would be ridiculous for God to communicate to a man in a language he doesn't understand. He was an Arab. His language was Arabia, Arabic. So that's the main reason. That's the main reason. But then God is foreknowing. I think that's enough to say. If it's not, then some of you ought to excuse yourself. God is foreknowing. So it was in God's plan to have his last revelation given in Arabic. It was in his plan. And Arabic has this special value that I've mentioned already, that it had this special value even at the time of Revelation. And I've done some research on Arabic as a language. And the Jews themselves, they say that of the Semitic languages, that Arabic is the most original and the truest to the nature of Semitic language. The truest to the nature of Semitic languages. They check their language by Arabic when they want to see if certain terms have gotten off track or something. They will study Arabic to get help. Not that Arabic is the only help for them, but Arabic is a source, a help for them in correcting problems with their own language, with their language, Semitic language, with the Jews' language, the Jews, the language of the Jews. and when you study the Arabic expressions in the Quran, you could see that without the power of the Arabic language itself, these expressions that come from God would not have the same power and value. Would not have the same power and value. I know of no other language that, and the proof of it is that no translator yet have been satisfied with his translation. They all say that the translation falls terribly short of conveying what they know, what they receive from the Arabic. That's why you need so much, you need translation, and you need explanation, and you need commentary. You see? You need all that. there's a lot I would like to say about the language, but we're going to go right to the Arabic itself. The Arabic. The term Rab. This is Rab. Rab. This word here, Rab, is one of the first, very important, powerfully communicating, powerful words in the Quran in terms of compact meaning and ability to just communicate so much with one word. Actually, Rab is really one syllable, isn't it? Rab. When you say the Rabbun is two syllables, when you pronounce the sign at the end of the letter, but it's actually Rab, one syllable letter, but so rich in meaning. So the word, so rich in meaning, Rab. Allah is the Rab of all the worlds. If we see the Quran as we read it, with Al-Fatiha being the beginning for our reading of the Quran, the opening and beginning of the Quran, then the first words of the Quran, as we read it, are Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Then Alhamdulillahi. So we have two descriptions of God until now, right? Bismillahir Rahman, that's one description of Rahman. Rahim, two descriptions. Alhamdulillah, Rab, third description. The third description in the Quran that we come upon, and we just began reading the Quran, is this one, Rab. And it says, Rabbil Alameen. Alhamdulillahi, Rabbil Alameen. Affected grammatically. That's how comes Rabbi. Otherwise, speaking as a noun, a subject, it would be Rabbu, a Rabbun, you see. I'm not here to teach you Arabic. This is not an Arabic lesson session, a workshop, whatever you want to call it. this is Quranic Arabic. Quranic Arabic, okay? Rabbul Alameen. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. So Lord of all the world. Al Alameen. Lord of all the world. How do we find the meaning now for the common person? The message, the revelation. The revelation. How do we find it for the common person? How is this expression used other than for God? Do we have to go to an Arabic dictionary or an Arabic encyclopedia for it? Never go to any book before you go to the same book. Always go to the same book for the meaning. In the Quran is the dictionary for the Quran. Yes. This is the revelation. This is revelation 2. I'm giving you right now. In the Quran is the dictionary for the Quran. Did it send us outside for keys? No. He has the keys to the heavens and earth, huh? All the keys with the revelation. Okay. Rabbul Alameen. That means dictionary keys, meaning, definition. Okay. Yes, Rabbul Alameen. Lord of all the world. Okay. In the Quran, our God teaches us in a beautiful way to respect our parents. And the expression used is with this, the term used with this expression, Lord, be to them as they were to me, kind, huh? Huh? as they were to me when they raised me up as a child. And this word is used. Rabbayani, for two during the verb. This is the verb of the noun. Rabbayani, yeah, for two. Rabbayani Sahira, when they raised me up when I was small. As they raised me up when I was small, as a child. Rabbayani Sahira. So, Rabbayani. This is a Rab. Rabba, and this is Ya. This is two dots. Ya, ni. And then when I was small, Sahira, you know, we don't have to put that. So here is the same term used again in a different context. Here's how we find definition for the term in the Quran. You see how God used the same term in different references or in different contexts. Then you get the meaning of that term. How do we know the meaning of go? By its usage. Huh? That's the only way you know. So if you want to know the meaning of any term in the Quran, study its usage in the context of the Quran. Then you get its meaning. Rabbayani Sahira and Rab. So you have scholars, right? Scholars, great scholars. Don't like a breakage in anything, unless it's supposed to be broken. So you have scholars, you know, they say the evolver, the evolver for Lord, call it the evolver, the Lord who evolved the world. So now this is not Darwin's evolution, this is different. So, here we have the meaning raised up. Now, every person know how a child is raised up by parents. So then now we have to go to the dictionary and see what raised means. No, we don't, because raised have been used in a common context. Say, as you raised me up when I was a small child. We all know how children are raised up by their parents from small child. Right? So what is the meaning of raised now? To love. To cherish. To be concerned for. To watch out for the needs of. To serve the needs of. To guide, direct. To look to the future and aim that child's life to the future that you want for it. You cut out for a child of, I want that child to be this kind of person. This kind of person. Then you groom that child. You care for that child and nourish that child and groom that child so that that child grows into the beautiful destiny you want for it. And what you want for it is that it be responsible for itself and responsible for more than itself. Huh? You want to raise it up so it will be like you. You're responsible for it and other things too. So you want that child to grow up into more responsibility, to be more independent and less dependent. Correct? So that's what it means. Rabbul Alamin. Now you say, well, how can that go for the world? The earth, the Mars and the sun and the stars out there. How are we to understand that or apply that to that reality? If God, by his will, has made the existence of something, created or caused the existence of something, and also laws governing the existence of forces or enforces a discipline and also an adjustment so that any situation that interrupts the will or the discipline will be taken care of by a law that enforces an adjustment. So the creation, like the child, when it comes to a point where it needs to make an adjustment, there is a law and an adjustment factor that comes about. They call it adaptation or whatever, that comes about, that comes into action or comes into play to make it possible for that existence to grow or progress into a form for surviving beyond the problem, or for survival beyond the problem, right? So survival is threatened to make it grow, really, isn't it? Survival is threatened to bring it to where God wants it to go. So God created it, but God created it to run into problems. And the problem it's going to run into have already been taken care of by an adjustment factor. And when it runs into that problem, it's going to make an adjustment. And the adjustment is going to be more progress, more evolution for that particular existence. Now, isn't that what we do for our children? So we know it's going to run into problems, but we know also that if we can't guide it to the adjustment or prepare it for the adjustment, we know that God's mercy. If we can get God's mercy, that child will be saved from that problem, right? That's the real personal faith, you see. God is Rob of all the world, Lord of all the world. Will parent serve as a substitute for the term Rob? No. No. Although God has really kind of related the role of parent to the role of God. And this has happened naturally for man. Man has naturally come into that kind of idea about God, that I must have a higher parent. I must have a more powerful parent. Somewhere there is a generator that's more powerful and older than my parent, even than my ancestor that I can trace back as far as I can go in my mind. I trace him back, but how did he come here? He needed some help. So man keeps going back in his mind and in his logic, with his logic that he has, he keeps going back, and he comes to the conclusion that there must be a supreme parent that parented me and all the worlds, all existence. Yes, Rabbul Alameen. All of this is in the Rabbul Alameen. Rabbul Alameen, Lord of all the worlds. All right, so now God is Lord of all the worlds. But look at the Arabic language for world. If Alameen means world, Alam means one world. Alam. It's too sensitive, your volume is too high or something. Then Alam means one world, right? Alameen, world. Alam, world. What also is Alam? Knowledgeable person. And God says, above every possessor of knowledge is God the most knowledgeable. Above every knowledgeable person, a knowledgeable thing, is a possessor of knowledge, is God the most knowledgeable. This is Quran. God the most knowledgeable. I'm tying that to Rabbul Alameen. I'm tying this expression in the Quran to Rabbul Alameen. Above every great knowledgeable person or being is God the most knowledgeable. then what is that saying? It is saying Allah Rabbul Alameen. That's what it's saying. That expression is saying, the two expressions are saying the same thing. Rabbul Alameen, God is the Lord of all the world, meaning that God is responsible for all the world, coming into their maturity, into their existence as we see them established. And when we say above all the knowledgeable possessors of knowledge or knowledgeable persons is God, so we are saying that God is responsible for those knowledgeable persons. They are not his teachers. He's their teacher. He didn't get his from them. They got theirs from him. That's what it's saying. So actually the two are saying, addressing the same issue. The same issue. Now, we're still talking about the common man. Still addressing the mind of the common man. Not the man of higher knowledge or the man of revelation. We're still addressing the mind of the common man. And you should have been able to follow me with your common mind till this point. All right? Okay. He is Rabbul Alameen, Lord of all the world. He evolved all the worlds. He's the one who had the concern for his creation. Created it feeble, weak, needing attention from the strong. Huh? Needing help from the knower. Needing help from the former, the one that formed it. Yes. Now, you know, we take too much credit, but we get deserved a little bit. I had that baby. That's my baby. I had that baby. I made that baby. Isn't that it? Now tell me if I'm saying things that I dreamed last night. I think those are expressions. In the society. I made that baby. So we feel that way ignorantly. And it has an inkling of truth to it. You see? So, and because of that, we have a personal responsibility and a personal kind of obligation. Very, very personal obligation to this child that we say we made. Right? Leave him alone, he ain't yours. Another expression, right? Yes. So now because of that awareness of our involvement and that the child didn't exist until we acted. My Lord. Child didn't have any existence at all until we acted. It was our act that made that thing. That act. Excuse me for saying thing. I guess it's indication of the time. So because of that now, we accept the obligation and accept it with commitment, attachment, devotion, etc. This is my child. I'm going to raise this child. I have to raise this child. Even if I have to suffer myself, I have to care for this child. Yeah. Now you think God doesn't suffer like a human suffers. But God suffered us to be free on our own. You know, suffer means bear, put up with, endure the displeasure. Now, we know God endures the displeasure because our object is to please him. So if we don't, he must endure us, put up with the displeasure. How wonderful it is. Now, what I mean, it's wonderful to be able to tap dance on two realities and not get out of step. It's wonderful. Yeah. Now, all it is, as much believe as you have believe until you say, this is our life, and that's correct. This is our life. This is the real life. Yes. In Christianity, they make the prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, Lord. In Judaism, they don't say it, but every rabbi is Lord. Rabbi is Lord. Rabba means Lord. So now, here is man now believing, and who's behind this theory anyway? That the world was evolved by the Creator, and it rested. Our holy book says God is a worker, and God is active, and he is not at any time in time idle, but in a wonderful work, doing a marvelous thing at every instance of time. And then the telescope finally bears witness to it. No, the world has not ceased creating, being created. New stars are being born. Great worlds out there far away from us are coming into existence. That's what they say. So really, that theory has been proven wrong. The universe is not yet rested. The same thing that happened to bring this into existence and evolve a law and an order for it is happening out there in the distance, according to their own observation with their long telescopes, with their powerful telescopes. Correct? All right. But let's say let's ignore what has been discovered by modern science. And let's stick with that idea that it has rested. Maybe out there something is happening, and we do believe it. It's happening all the time. New births going on all the time in the distance. But for this family of bodies we call the solar system, it is rested. Yes, it is rested. So it's rested. We still don't accept that kind of reasoning, that man is not Lord, or man is the one now responsible, taken care of, and responsible for the continuation of growth and development or evolution. Man comes into knowledge. He makes improvement upon himself. He makes improvement upon his environment. He raises the level of his existence. He improves and advances and raises the level of his existence. Is he Lord? The same law operating in the universe as an expression of God's will is operating in man, who is just a part of this universe. The same one that designed the earth and other bodies and things in the earth to perform as they perform, designed man in his mind to perform as they perform, or as it performs. Now, if we recognize that the earth is Lord, if we can recognize that the tree has no tree Lord, shouldn't we recognize that the man has no man Lord? That's common sense, isn't it? Common sense reasoning. Now, these things that you witness that were raised by a Lord, a creator, you don't say that they have a tree Lord. You don't say the tree have a tree Lord. The elephants have an elephant Lord. You don't say the sun has a sun, Lord. The earth has an earth, Lord. You don't say that. Well, why say man has a man Lord? You're thinking on your own. That's your problem. Start thinking on reality. Thinking with the support of reality, not your own mind. Or your mind dreams and exaggerates and become flawed in terms of ability to reason clearly. Yes. You become subjective and make big scientific errors. And subjective means you let the subject come into the logic and affect the logic. So here you're looking at yourself and admiring yourself that you've done so many wonderful things. Look at the wonderful things the Son have done. And once the man thought it was the Lord. But the man grew up to realize it's not the Lord. The Son has heated and given warmth to the life and has fed life all over the planet, given it energy and food, increased its power to grow, given it more vitality, etc., and made the world so plentiful in life, but not by itself. See, that's the difference in God and things that we make the mistake of identifying as God. The sun does that wonderful work, but without water, it'll be helpless. Right? Sun does all that wonderful work. It supplies the energy for growth. But without water, it can't do it. Big old powerful sun need little, humble, weak water in order to do its job. Right? Yes. Can't grow a thing without water. Can't have any life without water. So for man too, he's Lord. He's doing all these wonderful things. He increased the land in beauty and richness and in quantity of things.
Yes, he does.
But is he doing that by himself? Just like we have to have water first before we can have life, man has to have the material first before he can have growth for his world. And he's not the God or the Lord of the material that he uses. He's not even the teacher of the material he uses. He doesn't teach the material. The material teaches him. So, you see how his reality is reduced when we start reasoning soundly? Not a big Lord ain't so big, is he? He ain't so big now. Rabbul Alamin, Lord of all the worlds. But the worlds that revelate now, not common, not the common thought now, it is the uncommon thought, revealed thought, a thought influenced by revelation. Now we're moving from the common man's thought to the revelation now. Now, okay, so now God is not only the Lord of these worlds, these physical bodies, but he's the Lord of the system of knowledge. Not just the system of material. The system you're looking at is the system of material. He's not just Lord of that. He's Lord of the system of knowledge. And he created you, man, to benefit from his system of knowledge. And favored you above all his creation with a mind to benefit from his system of knowledge. Isn't that wonderful? Above all the things that he created, he favored man to benefit the most from his system of knowledge. And here you are, you come to the point in your own vanity, you come to the point that you dismiss the existence of a Lord anymore and say that you are the Lord now. We must not see God as the Lord, the God, or Creator as the Lord anymore. We must see the Creator in man, in the body of man, as the Lord. So God is in man now. And the world is under man now. And the man world is going to be judged by man now. And the world should worship man now. Am I off key? They tell me now. I know we got some Baptist preachers in here. Tell me. I never talked to this many imams without a Baptist preacher in here. So talk back. Lord of all the worlds. Lord of all the worlds. The system of planets. He's not just Lord Evolver of the system of planets. He's Lord and Evolver of the system of knowledge. And the wisest of scientists would tell us that some of his greatest breakthroughs came to him accidentally or by accident. Huh? Yes. But even if it wasn't by accident, if it was by careful concentration, the concentration is the instrument God gave you. That's how you were able to do that. He made that instrument. Hell, if I make an instrument that does wonders and get a patent for it, you going to take credit for it? Just because it's working wonderfully for you? I'll carry you to the court. Rabbul Alamin, Lord of all the world. Now, again, on the level of revelation, you people in the religious hierarchy, in the religious leadership, older people, you have claimed that you are lords. And then here comes another revelation. Use the term Lord. Let us not raise among ourselves lords. Huh? Lords. Say a man among us is Lord. That's what Allah says in the Quran. You see? That the prophet is to address the people and challenge them and appeal to them, to their good senses, and say, you want peace? You want fairness between us? You want a civilized world? Let us not raise up lords among ourselves to put over the rest of us. Well, nobody has been given the right to do that. Okay, you come up with a white lord, pretty soon somebody's going to come up with a black lord. And this problem is going to multiply. So we have the European laws, we have the Asian laws, we have the African laws, now we have the black man of America, the Negro laws, we have all these laws. And all of them disappoint Abraham, peace be upon him. But they look so beauty in that glory. They look so powerful and beautiful in that glory. Oh, magnificent son of man. Oh, I love you. Out the mouth. As-salamu alaykum. And then pretty soon, march them to the grave. Well, that kind of Lord didn't satisfy Abraham. He said, my Lord is not one that's set. Praise be to Allah. See, this is the beautiful one. And we're just talking about one word. Allah says, before you can exhaust what is in the Quran, you will use up all the trees making pens. And the oceans multiplied over again, with ink. Rabbul Alameen, Lord of all the world. All this is love. Now, your Imam, when I say your Imam, I want to say you, because I'm you. You! We are one people and one spirit and one body. You! Separated like planets, our solar system, from Arabs, Italians, Jews, and others. Our solar system birthed this. Yeah. Now, I'm speaking symbolically, you understand. A cup of coffee, black coffee won't help you if you take it literally. Yeah, I see you prime time with a straight jacket on. I don't want to see that. Yeah, but I'm you and you're me. We are one birth. You know that? In terms of what we are as a Muslim community, we are one birth. My birth and your birth all together with one birth. This is one birth. So out of this one birth has come one now to say something and learn it. Pakistani Muslim, pick it up, and he's thrilled by so much, he puts a drawing in the paper with world and quotes the Imam, right within Muhammad, that Allah is Rabbul Alameen. Saying that the Imam has brought us to a higher level of understanding regarding this statement, Rabbul Alameen, that he is the Lord of the systems of knowledge. He's Lord of mathematics. Yes. He's the Lord of algebra. He's the Lord of astronomy. He's the Lord of chemistry. He's the Lord of medicine. He's the Lord of everything. He's the Lord of every system of knowledge. They don't believe it? Just examine those who claim that they are the beneficiary and trace where they got it. And you trace it back to the original owner, God himself, the Lord of all the world. Yes. And even say man makes arguments and fails to question his own existence. Made great theories of how the world came in. Don't need no great theory. How you came in, man? So why take this big task of examining the unlimited, infinite world when we can just question you where you came from? Were you around here to take care of us 200 years ago? Well, how are you going to be our God, man? We were doing all right before you came. And that's what Allah said in the Quran, that who is the best to judge? He who just popped up or the one that has been around for all time? Oh, Lord, I'm telling you this. Now, after you understand God is that description, then you can understand Alhamdulillah. That's what you should say for that Lord. Alhamdulillah. Why is he deserving of all this great praise? Because he is Lord of all systems of knowledge. And man doesn't praise because he sees trees and animals and things like that. He doesn't praise. The man, the best, the perfect praise, the complete praise comes when man's intellect appreciates what he sees outside. When he's understand that within these things are systems of knowledge. Within everything is systems of knowledge. وَسِعَ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ عِلْمٍ. He incorporates everything, or everything is tied together by systems of knowledge. But not only that, in another place he says, ilman wa rahma, knowledge and mercy. And that's where man fails sometimes. He divorced himself from the mercy for the sake of continuing blindly on his course with the knowledge. and end up punishing us instead of relieving us. Yes. Urban Renewal was one of those cases, wasn't it? Urban Renewal set out to make man's life better and really punish life. But you know, man is stubborn. Once he goes so far in his path and get a lot of credit for it, he'd rather kill himself, and you too, than admit he erred. I've gone too long now. Too many people have been giving me credit for this. I'll never admit that I made a mistake. Hell, it just happened to suffer. So we will conclude this discussion with that conclusion that we made. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Yes, and our conclusion was that revelation is broadcast on two levels. The level of common language and the level of revelation, right? That's its nature, that it addresses the common mind, but also addresses the uncommon mind, the mind that has been trained by the guidance or by the light of revelation, you see? So, and we concluded that in addressing the human being, the common community of human beings on these two levels, it warns us that the creation is not rested. Now, I hope that was the conclusion you came to, the conclusion I was trying to get. That is not really rested. So even for the common man, no. The Lord, the first Lord is evidence that the first Lord is still active in his role as creator. Now, before these planets and these new worlds that they discover out there in the universe were known, that they're being born all the time, Allah said, at every point in time, he is in a marvelous work of creating. Kulli yawmin fan. In a marvelous work of creating things. And we see also in the Quran God pointing to worlds that existed, but we didn't know them. Says that there are worlds that he created that you do not know. Is that what's in the Quran? Yes, there are the worlds you know, but there are worlds that he created that you do not know. And it took modern science to show us the great big world of microorganisms. In the time of the prophet, it was not known. Is that correct or not? But here it is, just a few centuries after the prophet, science discovers that there is a whole other world, marine life, microorganisms. Not only marine life, they exist all in the air everywhere. That we can't see with our eyes. Microorganisms. Yes, microbes. And the Quran has addressed it before it was known. This is no accident. This is communication coming from the Lord of the world. No accident. He is the Lord of all the world. And we have made it clear that the person with his insight, common mind, blessed with insight of scientific perception, he made a mistake too. And glorifying himself and forgot to keep his mind on the very material and sources that from which he was benefiting and from which he was gaining a situation
for growth of his own intellect. His own intellect was oppressed. And it was what he found in the natural order God created that gave him a situation for freeing his own intellect. He frees it and baths in the light of his own glory and forgets his humble origin and his dependency. While you're boasting, you're just dressed up in dependency. Yes, you're boasting as independent. You're the boss. You're the God. You're the but the common man with his common sense is woman too. It laughs. Oh, I say it today, Miss Nora. I never really believed that. For I was God. I never did believe that man was God. You know, he said it, but I never really believed it. That's that mind, common mind that God created. Your mind has to become unreal before you accept that a man is God or something like that. Your mind has to become unreal. So they have to give you the unreal to convert you to accept the unreal. So they give you a fantasy, a story tale, a fantasy story about the origin of things and the creation of things, you know. They give you a lie about the reality of matter and everything, and now you are ready to believe a man is God.